The Jacobites are based mostly in the south, and they have control of the Irish administration. William lands in Carrickfergus, and the two armies meet at the Boyne. So how did that come about that they met at that particular place?
The year before William lands, 1689, Duke Schomberg had landed in Ulster, had failed to capture the entire country in March on Dublin and deliver a knockout blow, but he had recaptured most of Ulster and consolidated Protestant resistance, which had held out in the west of the province at Enniskillen notably and at Derry. So that when William comes, Ulster is the only province which is largely Williamite. William's preference would have been for Schomberg to have landed closer to Dublin in the first place. His priority is now to march on Dublin, and James, who was based in Dublin, James, who has come to Ireland in March 1689, has to decide how is he going to respond. Some of his advisors, notably the French advisors, and he has French backing. Louis XIV treats this as a proxy war against William, and he gives him some backing in finance, officers, specialists, engineers, gunners and so on, and equipment and material. James's French advisors say, look, abandon Dublin, burn it, pull back behind Shannon, and hold out there behind the supposedly impregnable Shannon barrier, and let the French navy bring aid to Limerick or Galway, as the case may be. Don't try and meet these people in the field. James ultimately disregards this advice late in the day. And if you're looking at the map, there's an army of invasion coming from the north. There are really only two places you can have a credible line of defence between Belfast and Dublin. And one would be at the Moiré Pass, the area between Newry and Dundalk. And the other would be along the river line of the Boyne. They decide not to contest Moiré Pass. Belatedly decide we're not going to abandon Dublin and choose to fight on the Boyne. Hence, you've got one army, the larger one, coming from the north, one army, the defending one, the smaller one, on the south bank, waiting for them. Hence, the Boyne becomes the point of tactical significance. Why? Because it's the only, and it's not a particularly impressive barrier, but it's the only geographical barrier after the Moiré Pass.
What chance did the Jacobites have of stopping the Williamites at that particular place, at the Boyne near the town of Drogheda?
Looking at the bold figures, they were 25,000 strong, the Williamites were 36,000 strong, they were stronger in guns, howitzers, which meant that the Jacobites could not defend the riverbank closely, they had to pull well back. They couldn't really stop the Williamites from establishing a foothold on the bank. The position invited envelopment by the Williamites. By envelopment, I mean a portion of the Williamite army going around to one side, crossing elsewhere, crossing upriver and coming in to their side or behind them. So therefore, it's a very vulnerable position. So in strict military terms, their chances were slim enough. However, the day before the battle, while William was carrying out a reconnaissance, the Irish had pulled a field gun within range, undiscovered, of the king while he was breakfasting. When he emerged and got on his horse again, they fired a gun, and the ball struck the king. It struck him on the right shoulder, grazed him, no great harm done. 4 inches in another direction, the Williamite army would have been decapitated. So would the Williamite cause. Could there have been a Williamite cause without William? No. So something as small as one person's life could have made a huge difference, and in that sense the Jacobites probably would have won. It's hard to imagine the Williamites proceeding with the same vigour, with the same determination and single-mindedness without the guiding and inspiring and driving presence of William.
Would it be fair to say the battle wasn't all that bloody?
On the Irish side, perhaps 1,000 were lost. On the Williamite side, 500. So it's 1,500 men out of a total of 60,000. Those are relatively small casualties. It's less of one big encounter battle than 5 or 6 skirmishes. Fairly sharp but short clashes over a wide swathe of countryside. 3 of those are encounters when the Jacobites were in retreat, were maintaining some form of rearguard action to cover their retreat. So it's not a big classic encounter. the de route or a route. It's more of a route or a running battle than a classic parallel order encounter battle.
The infantry battle was won quite easily, I think, by the Williamites, whereas the cavalry battle, the Jacobite cavalry, who are composed of, say, the Catholic gentry, was much harder fought. Does this show us a class division where Jacobitism is basically an ideology of the upper classes, the landed Catholic classes?
That is an interesting question, and any answer I give would have to be speculative, because you can turn that on its head and you could look at the Battle of Ockham, where the hardest fighting is undertaken by the infantry, and it's the cavalry embody, as it were, the upper class, the landowning classes within society, they're the ones who break and flee. So I think there's something in that. I think probably there's a greater sense of engagement in what's at stake on the part of the surviving Catholic landowning elite. And I think that may explain the ferocity with which the cavalry fought at the time. Also, what may explain it is that they were better resourced, and they had their equipment and their horses were quite good. Their training was quite good. It's more complicated than just a lack of engagement by the Catholic lower orders in what was at stake. Because certainly if you look at the popular poetry of the time, if you take that as a window on Catholic popular opinion, there's no sense of non-engagement with the war. I mean, they see this as a religious war, and in that sense they see themselves as actively involved in it and beneficiaries, or would be beneficiaries from it. And they express the usual views common to hierarchical societies of the time of loyalty to their lords and belief in their religion. So you're probably looking for class divisions in where they don't exist.
And of course there's other reasons why the Williamite infantry were superior. They were better armed and better trained.
If you look at the technical disparity between the Williamite infantry and the Jacobite infantry, they were better armed. They had a new weapons package, flintlock muskets, as opposed to the older matchlock muskets. It may seem like a subtle distinction to us, but they could deliver far more rounds per minute with greater accuracy. So they're better armed. There are more of them. On the day, numbers and better equipment told. The spearhead of Blue White Infantry at Old Bridge, where you had a direct clash with the Irish, were the Dutch Guards. They were the elite Dutch unit. Now, having said that, the units meeting them on the riverbank, or near the riverbank, were the Irish Guards, the foot guards. So you have, if you like, the elites on both sides. The Irish Guards were beaten back. They were beaten back because there were fewer of them, and because the artillery shelling and bombardment had probably softened them up. But there are reasons other than class that account for the performance, the relative performance of the infantry on both sides. That said, the infantry broke after the battle. The Irish infantry broke when retreating and weren't really rallied until 6 weeks later at Limerick. So something went wrong. Something went wrong, badly wrong, with the Jacobite army. Less at the back of the third and in the retreat, but that rot, and it was a rot, began at the top. It began with James. He was the first one to flee. And it worked. And if you look carefully at the accounts show that the demoralisation began at the top and percolated downwards. There was a lack of leadership, effective leadership, until they recovered the nerves 6 weeks later.
The Williamites marched into Dublin, and they were mostly welcomed by the, I think at the time, mostly Protestant population of Dublin.
Absolutely. Dublin was a settler city at this stage, had been since the mid-17th century, and the citizens would have considered themselves oppressed by the Jacobite, the short-lived Jacobite regime. So there was a guard of honour of the citizens, and for the joie and religious services, and all the rest of it. They were very much welcomed as liberators.
If we talk about the results, I mean, the Williamites got across the river, the Jacobite cavalry counterattacked them, and most of their army got away. So why is it that people think of the Boyne as being one of these great decisive battles?
Well, because politically, it's strategically, in the first instance, it decides a number of things. It yields the province, it yields the capital of Ireland, it leads to the capture of most of Munster, it leads to the capture of the ports on the Irish Sea, which is very important for countering French naval supremacy. So Waterford, Wexford, these ports, Dublin, are captured. These are huge advantages. They reduce the chance of William being cut off by the French fleet in Ireland from Britain, and they capital, he can then say he has won the war, the rest is mopping up. And James agrees. James, in the wake of the Boyne, loses heart and in effect tells his supporters to solve people, look out for their own interests, and flees from Duncannon very shortly afterwards. So even James is conceding this is something decisive. So there's a disparity, as it were, between the actuality, what happened on the field, the body count, the other indices of decisiveness, and the fact that it had profound strategic and political effects. Though it did not, as it turns out, end the war, as William thought it would. The siege of Limerick, or the failure to capture Limerick, ensured that the Boyne would not be the decisive battle. The battle finished off Irish resistance. So there is a difficulty in reconciling its military indecisiveness and its longer-term political